Hello, ghosts and ghouls. Welcome to another episode of Danica Raven's Bite-Size Horror. This week, the devil is in the details with this compilation of hellish tales. First up, we have RPG by Alex Denton. Next, we have Daniel and the Devil by Eugene Fields. Last but not least, we have Other People by Neil Gaiman. Richard stood in what to his eyes seemed a blank canvas, an endless picture of pearlescent white with no noticeable features to distinguish texture or size, as if he'd been absorbed into a gigantic cloud, a vacuum of entity. Where the hell am I? He wondered, his mind a mixture of curiosity, wonder, and hint of annoyance. He tried to picture how he had gotten here, but his mind was a blur, as though a mist had descended upon his very thoughts and left him lost without them. The only thing he could remember was the music. Yes, the music that he'd been playing in his car. He'd been driving home and it was raining that night. Yes, it began to drip back to him now. The music, the car, the rain, the crash. Enjoying the view, spoke a soft, inquisitive voice that seemed to echo all around. At the sound of it, Richard darted around to face his host. He was not quite ready for what he gazed. In place of where just moments ago had been infinite white, now appeared a brown wooden desk, and seated behind it was something. It was tall, several feet taller than he, and bone thin. Though its arms seemed half the length of its elongated body, with fingers that Richard thought more like miniature spears, its neck was a length and a half of the size of his, its skin a pale colour that looked almost translucent, and its face was a bulbous void, lacking of eyes, nose, ears. Any distinguishable detail or emotion, save for a giant Cheshire grin plastered across its face. Takes a while to get used to, doesn't it? Its voice seemed to admit, despite the mouth not moving. Richard was transfixed. As the face did not move, still locked into that constant grinning smile. When Richard said nothing, the creature continued. Please, have a seat. As it motioned with its arm, a chair opposite its own was now there, as if willed into existence by the mere suggestion of the thing itself. Richard did not move at first. He couldn't imagine what to say or do. He had nothing to explain the scenario in his head. The creature said nothing more. After a few moments, Richard cautiously stepped forward and seated himself, unable to look away from the grinning, featureless face. So what do you think of the place? Think I should redecorate? Is it trying to be funny? Richard awkwardly thought to himself. The creature was cloaked in silvery robes that were beginning to fray. He could see from this close up. So, dead. How's that working for you? Easy living, is it? It had the air of a game show host about it. Who are you? What is all this? Richard demanded, trying his best to appear brave despite his inner misgivings. Oh well, that's easy. You died. In a car crash, specifically. Nasty way to go, if you don't mind me saying so. Richard couldn't quite get to grasp it. Such crushing news, delivered with such a devilish smile and chipper voice. So, this is what? Heaven? Hell? The creature made a gurgling, buzzing noise, as if trying to imitate that of an incorrect answer. Wrong guess, I'm afraid. We're more at a stopping station, a main menu, if you like. What are you exactly? The Grim Reaper? Not exactly. Think of me more as an interested party, an opportunist. You can call me the developer. I have an offer for you, if you'd like to hear it. Richard could only look at it in silence, unable to discern anything from this thing's blank face, constantly unnerved by its unwavering grin. What kind of offer? I like to think of life as one big game. You were a player in it, and tragically, you lost. Pretty early on, too. Barely collected all 151 or past goal. But what if I told you that you could, to put it in simple terms, respawn? Essentially, start again with another life. And the cherry on top? You'd retain all your knowledge, able to carry on in a new body and explore different options, different paths that you didn't or couldn't try last time. You'd be able to level up. Think of all the rich, juicy experience points your soul would soak up doing so. What do you think? Richard was bewildered, to say the least. Is this even real? He pondered. Maybe this is all just one big comatose delusion and I'm still at the car crash unconscious. He didn't know, but the offer was interesting. Starting again, with everything he knew. He had made mistakes in his life. He knew and accepted this. He drank too much. And he should have treated his wife, soon to be ex, better. But what if he could take all that regret and get a fresh start from it, with the knowledge of what to do and what not to do? It was tantalising. It was like the slithering of a serpent within his mind. You're already dead anyway. I'm giving you the chance to live again. Might be fun. So, do we have a deal? Richard closed his eyes and resolved himself. Deal. Fabulous, my boy. He reached over to him with that extension of a limb in a gesture of a handshake. Richard cautiously did so, and as they grasped, the white void around them began to brighten and consume all. The last thing Richard saw before the light took him was that giant, grinning smile leering down at him. When Richard opened his eyes again, he was looking up and reaching out for his dada. The new one, with the silly beard and the pudgy nose. And instead of calling him Richard, he called him Alice. Alice stood once again in the familiar white void of the realm, and there again, waiting for her, was the developer. The same silvery robes, the same expressionless pale face, the same widening grin. It seemed not to have aged a day since she last saw it. Well, well, you've done well for yourself, haven't you? It gestured, and she took a seat. Award-winning journalist and humanitarian, you've levelled up indeed. I'm getting all choked up with pride. They do grow up so fast. She struggled to discern if its tone was filled with sarcasm or genuine glee. So, shall we reload the save again? Who knows what wonders you could do now? She didn't even have to think about it. Deal. For a second, she could swear she saw its bright smile become even greater. But then the light took her, and she was ready to start again. When next he stood in that realm of white, Micah had lived and experienced so much. He had been a teacher, a doctor, a mother, a soldier, a president, a criminal, a lover, an artist, an explorer, and so much more. He'd been so many people that at times he barely remembered who that fool who had called himself Richard had been. He was happier. He was wiser. There sat the developer, as it always did. Before it could even speak to him, Micah told it, "Deal." "Not quite this time, I'm afraid, dearie." He wasn't sure what to say. It had caught him off guard. This was new. "I don't understand." "You've done splendidly with your game. So many playthroughs. Such alternative paths. You've levelled up and gained so much glorious experience in that soul of yours. It's positively delicious. But like all games, they come to an end. You've reached the final boss. All that's left is God mode. We've had fun though." "Well, I certainly have." Micah was stunned by this information. "So, what happens now?" was all he could muster in his disappointment. The developer simply sat in silence before uttering two words. "Game over." Promptly, it stood from its desk and opened its robes. Micah stared in horror at what lay before his mortal eyes. The pale, elongated, bone-like frame of the developer that he was accustomed to. But where a torso should be, in place of it was a giant, vertical maw of teeth with blackness within. As the last of him was chomped down and the screams were gone, the developer once again donned his silver robes. Yum. Retaking its seat behind the desk, it clasped its spear-like fingers together. Suddenly, standing in the white void before it, was a frightened-looking, dark-skinned young woman. "New game," the creature thought to itself, as that eternal, evil grin continued to smile. Hello and welcome to another episode of Danica Raven's Bite-Sized Horror. This week's story is Daniel and the Devil by Eugene Field. If you're sitting comfortably, we shall begin. Daniel was a very wretched man. As he sat with his head bowed upon his desk that evening, he made up his mind that his life had been a failure. "I have laboured long and diligently," he said to himself, "and although I am known throughout the city as an industrious and shrewd businessman, I am still a poor man, and shall probably continue so to the end of my days unless... Here Daniel stopped and shivered. For a week or more, he'd been brooding over his unhappy lot. There seemed to be but one way out of his trouble. Yet his soul revolted from taking that step. That was why he stopped and shivered. "But," he argued, "I must do something. My 9 children are growing up into big boys and girls. They must have those advantages which my limited means will not admit of. All my life so far has been pure, circumspect and rigid. Poverty has at last broken my spirit. I give up the fight. I am ready to sell my soul to the devil." "That determination is a wise one," said a voice at Daniel's elbow. Daniel looked up and beheld a grim-visaged stranger in the chair beside him. The stranger was arrayed all in black, and he exhaled a distinct odour of sulphur. "Am I to understand," asked the stranger, "that you are prepared to enter into league with the devil?" "Yes," said Daniel firmly, and he set his teeth together after the fashion of a man who is not to be moved from his purpose.
Then I am ready to treat with you, said the stranger.
Are you the devil? Asked Daniel, eyeing the stranger critically.
No, but I am authorized to enter into contracts for him, explained the stranger. My name is Beelzebub, and I am my master's most trusted agent.
Sir, said Daniel, you must pardon me, for I am loath to wound your feelings, but one of the rules governing my career as a businessman has been to deal directly with principals and never to trust the offices of middlemen. The affair now in hand is one concerning the devil and myself, and between us two, and by us two only, can the preliminaries be adjusted.
As it so happens, explained Beelzebub, this is Friday, commonly called Hangman's Day, and that is the busiest time in our particular locality, as a Monday is in a laundry, or as the first of every month is to a bookkeeper's desk. You can understand, perhaps, that this is the devil's busy day. Therefore, be content to make this deal with me, and you will find that my master will cheerfully accept any contract I may enter into his agent, in and in his behalf. But no, Daniel would not agree to this. With the devil himself, and only the devil himself, would he treat. So he bade Beelzebub go to the devil and make known his wishes. Beelzebub departed, much chagrined. Presently, back came the devil. And surely it was the devil this time. There could be no mistake about it, for he wore a scarlet cloak and had cloven feet and carried about with him as many suffocating smells as there are kinds of brimstone, sulphur and asafoetida. The two talked over all of Daniel's miseries. The devil sympathised with Daniel, and ever and anon a malodorous, gummy tear would tickle down the devil's sinister nose and drop off onto the carpet. What you want is money, said the devil. That will give you the comfort and the contentment that you crave.
Yes, said Daniel.
It'll give me every opportunity to do good.
To do good, repeated the devil. To do good, indeed. Yes, it's many a good time we shall have together, friend Daniel.
And the devil laughed uproariously. Nothing seemed more humorous than the prospect of doing good with the devil's money. But Daniel failed to see what the devil was so jolly about. Daniel was not a humorist. He was, as if we have indicated, a plain businessman. It was finally agreed that Daniel should sell his soul to the devil upon conditions that for the space of 24 years, the devil should serve Daniel faithfully, should provide him with riches, and should do whatsoever he commanded to do. Then, at the end of 24 years, Daniel's soul was to pass into the possession of the devil and was to remain there forever, without recourse or benefit of clergy. Surely a more horrible contract was never to be entered into. You will have to sign your name to this contract, said the devil, producing a sheet of asbestos paper upon which all the terms of the diabolical treaty were set forth exactly.
Certainly, replied Daniel. I have been a businessman long enough to know the propriety and necessity of the written contract. And as for you, you must, of course, give a bond for the faithful execution of your part of this business.
That's something I've never done before, suggested the devil.
Well, I shall insist upon it, said Daniel firmly. This is no affair of sentiment. This is strictly and coldly business. You are to do certain service and are to receive certain rewards therefore.
Yes, your soul, cried the devil, gleefully rubbing his callous hands together. Your soul in 24 years.
Yes, said Daniel. Now, no contract is good unless there's a quid pro quo. That is so, said the devil. So let's get a lawyer and draw up the papers for me to sign. Why a lawyer? Queried Daniel. A contract is a simple instrument. I, as a businessman, can frame one sufficiently binding. But I'd prefer to have a lawyer do it, urged the devil. And I prefer to do it myself, said Daniel. When a businessman once gets his mind set, not even the Archimedean lever could stir it. So Daniel drew up the bond for the devil to sign. And this bond specified that in case the devil failed at any time during the next 24 years to do whatsoever Daniel commanded him, then should the bond which the devil held against Daniel become null and void. And upon the same day, should 1,001 souls be released forever from the devil's dominion. The devil winced. He hated to sign this agreement, but he had to. An awful clap of thunder ratified the abominable treaty, and every black cat within a radius of 100 leagues straightway fell to frothing and yowling grotesquely. Presently, Daniel began to prosper. The devil was a faithful slave, and he served Daniel so artfully that no person on earth suspected that Daniel had leaked with the evil one. Daniel had the finest house in the city, his wife dressed magnificently, and his children enjoyed every luxury wealth could provide. Still, Daniel was content to be known as a businessman. He ported himself modestly and kindly. He perused with all his old-time diligence and trade, which in earlier days he'd found so unproductive of riches. His indifference to the pleasures which money put within his reach was passing strange, and it caused the devil vast uneasiness. Daniel, said the devil one day, you're not getting out of this thing all the fun there is in it. You go poking along in the same old rut with never a suspicion that you have in it your power to enjoy every pleasure of human life. Why don't you break away from the old restraints? Why don't you avail yourself of the advantages at your command?
I know what you're driving at, said Daniel. Politics.
No, not at all, remonstrated the devil. What I mean is, well, fun. Gaiety. Why not have a good time, Daniel? But I'm having a good time, said Daniel. My business is going along all the right. I'm rich. I've got a lovely home, my wife is happy, my children are healthy and contented, I am respected. What more could I ask for? What better time could I demand?
You don't understand me, explained the devil.
What I mean by a good time is that which makes the heart merry, keeps the soul youthful and buoyant. Wine, Daniel. Wine, and the theatre, and pretty girls, and fast horses, and all that sort of happy, joyful life.
Tut, 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 cried Daniel. No more of that, sir. I sowed my wild oats in college.
What right have I to think of such silly follies? I, at 40 years of age, and a businessman too. So not even the devil himself could persuade Daniel into a life of dissipation. All you who have made a study of the businessman will agree that of all human beings, he is the hardest to swerve from conservative methods. The devil groaned and began to wonder why he'd ever tied up to a man like Daniel, a businessman. Pretty soon, Daniel developed an ambition. He wanted reputation, and he told the devil so. The devil's eyes sparkled. At last, murmured the devil, with a sigh of relief. At last. Yes, said Daniel. I want to be known far and wide. You must build a church for me.
What? Shrieked the devil,
and the devil's tail stiffened up like a sore thumb.
Yes, said Daniel calmly. You must build a church for me, and it must be the largest and handsomest church in the city. The sittings shall be free,
and you shall provide the funds for its support forever. The devil frothed at the mouth, and blue fire issued from his ears and nostrils. He was the maddest devil ever seen on earth.
I won't do it, roared the devil. Do you suppose I'm going to spend my time building churches and stultifying myself just for the sake of gratifying your idle whims? I won't do it. Never.
Then the bond I gave is null and void, said Daniel. Take your old bond, said the devil petulantly.
But the bond you gave is operative, continued Daniel. So release the 1,001 souls that you owe me when you refuse to obey me.
Oh, Daniel, whimpered the devil. How can you treat me so? Haven't I always been good to you? Haven't I given you riches and prosperity? There's no sentiment of friendship.
Hush, said Daniel, interrupting him. I have already told you 1,000 times that our relations were simply those of one businessman with another. It now behooves you to fulfil your part in our compact. Eventually I shall fulfil mine. Come now to business. Will you, or will you not, keep your word and save your bond?
The devil was sorely put to his trumps. But when it came to releasing 1,001 souls from hell, that staggered him. He had to build the church, and a noble one it was too. Then he endowed the church, and finally, he built a parsonage. Altogether, it was a stupendous work, and Daniel got all the credit for it. The preacher, who Daniel installed in this magnificent temple, was severely orthodox, and one of the first things he did was to preach a series of sermons upon the personality of the devil, wherein he enraged most bitterly against that person and his work. By and by, Daniel made the devil endow and build a number of hospitals, charity schools, free baths, libraries, and other institutions of similar character. Then he made himself secure the election of honest men to the office and of the upright judges to the bench. It almost broke the devil's heart to do it, but the devil was prepared to do almost anything else than forfeit his bond and give up those 1,001 souls. By this time, Daniel came to be known far and wide for his philanthropy and his piety. This gratified him, of course, but most of all he gloried in the circumstance that he was a businessman.
Have you anything for me to do today? Asked the devil one morning. He'd grown to be very meek and courteous.
Steady employment in righteous causes had chastened him to a degree and purged away somewhat of the violence of his nature. On this particular morning, he looked haggard and ill. Yes, he looked as blue as a whetstone.
I'm not feeling robust, explained the devil.
To tell the truth, I'm somewhat ill.
I'm sorry to hear that, said Daniel. But as I am not conducting a sanitarium, I can do nothing further than express my regret that you're ailing. Of course, our business relations do not contemplate any interchange of sympathies. Still, I'll go easy with you today. You may go up to the house, look after the children, see that they don't smoke cigarettes or quarrel or tease the cat or do anything out of the way. Now that was fine business for the devil to be in. But how could the devil help himself? He was wholly at Daniel's mercy. He went groaning about the humiliating task. The crash came at last. It was when the devil informed Daniel one day that he wasn't going to work for him anymore.
You've ruined my business, said the devil wearily. A committee of imps waited upon me last night and told me that unless I severed my connection with you, permanent suspension of my interest down yonder would be necessitated. While I've been running around doing your insane errands, my personal business has gone to the dogs. I wouldn't be at all surprised if I were to have to get a new plant altogether. Meanwhile, my reputation has suffered, I'm no longer respected, and the number of my recruits is daily becoming smaller. I give up. I can make no further sacrifice.
Then you're prepared to forfeit your bond? Asked Daniel.
Not by any means, replied the devil. I propose to throw the matter to the courts.
That would hardly be in your interest, said Daniel, since, as you well know, we have recently elected honest men to the bench, and as I recollect, most of our judges are members in good standing of the church that we built some years ago.
The devil howled with rage, then presently he began to whimper.
For the last time, expostulated Daniel, let me remind you that sentiment does not enter into this affair at all. We are simply two business parties cooperating in a business scheme. Our respective duties are exactly defined in the bonds we hold. You keep your contract and I'll keep mine. Let me see. I still have a margin of 13 years. The devil groaned and writhed.
They call me a dude, whimpered the devil.
Hoodoo, said Daniel. Beelzebub and the rest, said the devil. I've been trotting around doing pious errands so long that I've lost all my sulphur and brimstone flavour. Now I smell like spinard and myrrh.
Pooh, said Daniel.
Well, I do, insisted the devil. You've humiliated me so that I haven't got any more ambition. Yes, Daniel, you have worked me shamefully hard.
Well, said Daniel, I have a very distinct suspicion that when 13 years hence I fall into your hands, I shall not enjoy what might be called a sedentary life. The devil plucked up at this suggestion.
Indeed you shall not, he muttered. I'll make it hot for you.
But come, we waste time, said Daniel. I am a man of business, and I cannot fritter away the precious moments parleying with you. I have important work for you. Tomorrow's Sunday. You are to see that all the saloons are kept closed.
I shan't, I won't, yelled the devil.
Oh, but you must, said Daniel firmly.
Do you really expect me to do that? Roared the devil. Do you fancy that I am so arrant a fool as to shut off the very feeders whereby my hungry hell is supplied?
That would be suicidal.
I don't know anything about that, said Daniel.
I'm a businessman, and by this business arrangement of ours, it is explicitly stipulated that...
I don't care what the stipulations are, shrieked the devil. I'm through with you, and may I be consumed by my own fires if ever again I've anything to do with a businessman.
The upshot of it all was, the devil forfeit his bond, and by this act, Daniel was released from every obligation unto the devil, and 1,001 souls were ransomed from the torture of the infernal fire.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Danica Raven's Bite Size Horror. Today we're going to be looking at Neil Gaiman's Fragile Things. We're going to be reading the story Other People. If you're sitting comfortably, we shall begin. Time is fluid here, said the demon. He knew it was a demon the moment that he saw it. He knew it. Just as he knew the place was hell. There was nothing else that either of them could have been. The room was long, and the demon waited by a smoking brazier at the far end. A multitude of objects hung on the rock grey walls, of the kind that would not have been wise or reassuring to inspect too closely. The ceiling was low, the floor oddly unsubstantial. Come close, said the demon. And he did. The demon was rake thin and naked. It was deeply scarred, and it appeared to have been flayed at some time in the distant past. It had no ears, no sex. Its lips were thin and aesthetic, and its eyes were demon's eyes. They had seen too much and gone too far, and under their gaze, he felt less important than a fly. "What happens now?" he asked. "Now," said the demon, in a voice that carried with it no sorrow, no relish, only a dreadful, flat resignation. "You will be tortured." "For how long?" But the demon shook his head and made no reply. It walked slowly along the wall, eyeing first one of the devices that hung there, then another. At the far end of the wall, by the closed door, was a cat o' nine tails made of frayed wire. The demon took it down with one three-fingered hand and walked back, carrying it reverently. It placed the wire tines on the brazier and stared at them as they began to heat up. "That's inhuman."
"Yes."
The tips of the cat's tails were glowing a dead orange. As the demon raised its arms to deliver the first blow, it said, "In time, you'll remember. Even this moment, with fondness." "You're a liar."
"No," said the demon.
"The next part," it explained, in the moment before it brought down the cat, "is worse." Then the tines of the cat landed on the man's back with a crack and a hiss, tearing through the expensive clothes, burning and rending and shedding as they struck. And not for the last time in that place, he screamed. There were 211 implements on the walls of that room, and in time, he was to experience each of them. When finally, the Lazarine's daughter, which he'd grown to know intimately, had been cleaned and replaced on the wall in the 211th position, then, through wrecked lips, he gasped, "Now what?" "Now," said the demon, "the true pain begins." It did. Everything he had ever done that had been better left undone, every lie he had told to himself, told to others, every little hurt, and all the great hurts, each one was pulled out of him, detail by detail, inch by inch. The demon stripped away the cover of forgetfulness, stripped everything down to truth, and it hurt more than anything. "Tell me what you thought as she walked out the door," said the demon. "I thought my heart was broken." "No," said the demon, without hate. "You didn't." It stared at him with expressionless eyes, and he was forced to look away. "I thought, now she'll never know I've been sleeping with her sister." The demon took apart his life moment by moment, instant to awful instant. It lasted 100 years, perhaps, or 1,000. They had all the time there ever was in that grey room, and towards the end he realised that the demon had been right. The physical torture had been kinder, and it had ended. And once it had ended, it began again. There was a self-knowledge there that he had not had the first time, which somehow made everything worse. Now, as he spoke, he hated himself. There were no lies, no evasions, no room for anything except the pain and the anger. He spoke, he no longer wept. And when he finished, 1,000 years later, he prayed that now the demon would go to the wall and bring down the skinning knife or the choke pair or the screws. Again, said the demon. He began to scream. He screamed for a long time. Again, said the demon when he was done, as if nothing had been said. It was like peeling an onion. This time, through his life, he learned about consequences. He learned the results of the things he had done, things he had been blind to as he did them, the ways he had hurt the world, the damage he had done to people that he never knew or met or encountered. It was the hardest lesson yet. Again, said the demon, 1,000 years later. He crouched on the floor beside the brazier, rocking gently, his eyes closed, and he told the story of his life, re-experiencing it as he told it, from birth to death, changing nothing, leaving nothing out, facing everything. He opened his heart. When he was done, he sat there, eyes closed, waiting for the voice to say again. But nothing was said. He opened his eyes. Slowly, he stood up. He was alone. At the far end of the room, there was a door, and as he watched it, it opened. A man stepped through the door. There was terror in the man's face, and arrogance and pride. The man, who wore expensive clothes, took several hesitant steps into the room and then stopped. When he saw the man, he understood. Time is fluid here, he told the new arrival.
I hope you enjoyed those stories. Be sure to let us know which one was your favourite in the comments. Or feel free to send in your own work to the show. Good night and pleasant screams.
If you enjoyed the show, why not like, comment and subscribe?